Henry Winkler. Henry is best known for his breakout role as Arthur Fonzarelli, also known as the Fonz, on the long-running hit TV series Happy Days. Happy Days took place in Milwaukee, so that's why, if you're ever on the Riverwalk, you may come across a Cream City landmark, the Bronze Fonz statue. Henry has a reputation as the nicest man in Hollywood, so he'd fit right in here in the Midwest. We caught up with Henry to talk about his memoir, Being Henry, The Fonz, and Beyond. It's a propulsive page-turner in which he shares memories of his rough childhood, like living with undiagnosed dyslexia. He also opens up about the pressures of becoming the star of a show that he was not supposed to be the star of. And Henry addresses his Emmy-winning second act as Gene Cousineau in the hit HBO series, Barry. But his incredible journey all starts with the Fonz. Henry takes us back to his famed audition at Paramount Studios in October 1973.
I probably walked into the auditioning holding area where all of the actors were, thinking, oh my God, why am I here? Every actor has been on television. Then it was my turn. I walk into a room with 11 people. Gary Marshall, Tom Miller, Tom Milkus, the head of casting of Paramount, assistants galore, and I auditioned for a brand new series.
And this brand new series was, of course, Happy Days.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was the biggest audition of your life.
More than in so many ways.
Yeah.
Because out of that audition came my life in Hollywood. Out of that audition came my lifelong friendships with Ron, with Anson, Donnie, with Marion, the fabulous Ross. That show introduced me to the world.
You want to be cool? You don't do nothing to nobody that you don't want them to do to you, huh? Can you dig that?
When you did your audition, you took some improv. Like you were working with a guy named Pascal and you went off script.
Well, I went off script because I'm so dyslexic. I cannot read and do something else off the page. So you memorize as quickly as you can. And I don't know why, but I changed my voice when I walked in. I do not have the courage at that moment in my real life, but I did have the courage in my working life to take risks. I changed my voice and immediately started talking to everybody in the room. And I said to Pasquale, this lovely young man who's going to read with me, help me in the audition. I said, hey, don't look at me like that. You avert your eyes, look at somebody else. And I was off. Then we finished, I had six lines. I threw the script up in the air. I sauntered out of that room. And 2 weeks later on my birthday, they called me and asked me if I wanted to be in the show. My Yale guilt. Said, oh God, do our series. I don't know if I can do it. I was trained for the theater, you know. And I said, if you let me show the other side of this guy, the emotional side, they said yes. I said yes. And here I am sitting with you.
Hey!
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and here I am sitting with Henry Winkler. You say that it took you 50 years to realize that there really is a you inside you. Can you explain what you mean? I find that a fascinating thought.
There are two components. One is I was severely dyslexic. I'm in the bottom 3% academically in the country. My parents, first generation, they just came from Europe. Their education was everything. Education was a mountain I could not climb. They were dismayed, embarrassed, cruel, and punitive about my grades. I think that dyslexia also has an emotional component because you cannot figure life out or school out. You feel like you are nowhere. So the combination, and then add to that the teachers. I think that the book actually is the journey of starting being who I thought I should be and working my way to becoming authentically who I am, which I'm still on the journey toward.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. And that's exactly right. It's what you, how you described the book. That's exactly what it is. And that's why it's so powerful. You didn't learn that you were severely dyslexic until you were 31.
Yes, my stepson, Jed, who was in the third grade, so charming, so verbal, so able to communicate with anybody, couldn't write a sentence. And I said everything to him that was said to me. You're not living up to your potential. Stop being lazy. Go back to your room. Do it again. Couldn't do it. Had him tested. Everything they said about him, I went, oh, I've got something with a name. And I was so angry because all of the humiliation and the punishment and the not being able to watch TV and the grounding by the people who gave it to me because it's hereditary. Then I grew into, maybe without the struggle, trying to survive, failing at everything, gave me the tenacity to be here today.
Mm-hmm. So would that be fair to say, ideally, you would have found out earlier, at a much earlier age, that you were dyslexic?
If somebody was aware of it, cared about it, looked to see, who are you standing in front of me, instead of a extension to make us proud.
Yeah, yeah, very well said. Happy Days ran for 11 seasons. And during that time, your character became more popular than Ron Howard's character, Richie Cunningham. How did that dynamic impact your friendship?
The fourth year, I think, of Happy Days, we did an episode or two episodes, the beginning of the fourth year, on a dude ranch, which was a ranch outside of LA. And Ron Howard drove me back in his little VW bug, the original bug. And I said, okay, we got to talk about this, Ron. We're really good friends. We're really good acting partners. You got to tell me how you feel. And he said, look, I was hired as the star of this show. You didn't do anything. You never flaunted your success. You're really good at what you do. You're good for the show, but it hurt my feelings. But I love you. And I said, I love you. He's a gigantic presence because he is really so wise. He was so wise at 18 and I was 27. And his wisdom has continued to be the umbrella over our relationship.
That's for having all your freckles in the right place.
That's great. What a beautiful way of putting it. That's great. Schlitz was the beer that made Milwaukee famous. And I strongly believe that Henry Winkler was the actor that made Milwaukee famous. I know this because the city erected a statue of the Bronze Fonz in downtown Milwaukee. How did you react when you saw it live in person?
We were there for the unveiling. Everybody came. How is it possible that someone who was told that he would never achieve, he would never meet his dream, he was really, it was sad that you'll never be anything, all of a sudden be at the unveiling of a statue of a character you created in the character's hometown. It's beyond words. It's beyond words. Mm-hmm. Today, to this day, I get pictures almost every day of somebody from somewhere in the world who has posed with the, you know, I went there a couple, of course, I've been to Milwaukee many, many times as a public speaker or whatever the reason. And I walk up and I visit the statue and there's a couple taking selfies, you know. And I said, oh, excuse me, would you like me to take that picture? And they went, sure. And then they went, whoa. I'm taking a picture of them with a statue of me.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever have a chance? Did you have any association with Milwaukee and Wisconsin prior to Happy Days?
No. Afterwards, my daughter went to school in Madison.
Yeah, for 2 years. And then it was too cold for her, right?
Too cold.
So she came back home.
Too cold.
Yeah, 2 years. Go Badgers. You became an author in 2003 when you started writing the Hank Zipser, the world's greatest underachiever series of children's books with Lynn Oliver. And these books hold a special place in your heart. Why?
Because Hank is short for Henry. Zipser is a woman who lived on the fourth floor of my apartment building, Mrs. Zipser. And I thought it was a zippy name.
It is.
And they are the story of my life as a dyslexic. When I write them with Lynn, I remember very clearly what it was like to be 8 and a failure, trying so hard and not be able to do anything. And he has great friends, 2 friends, who do not treat him in any way except they love him. They are not dyslexic and they understand him. And people, kids all over the world, have asked me, how do you know me so well? Mm-hmm. And it is one of the great compliments of my whole life.
Many of our listeners will know you as the infamous acting teacher, Gene Cousineau, from HBO's hit series, Barry.
I once auditioned for the guy that robbed the house on Full House. And I carried a loaded Beretta with me into the audition just to feel the weight of it.
Did you get the part?
Oh, they freaked out. Now look, you're in a shell. You need to break out. And I've got the perfect antidote for you. 10 cc's of pure Mamet.
Mamet?
Yeah. You're going to play Blake in Glengarry Glen Ross, the movie. I'm going to send you the pages. Here's my only direction. Let the cat out.
We had Bill Hader on before season one even premiered, and he praised your work on Barry. How did playing Gene change your life?
In so many ways. Number one, it was a gift. Number two, I don't know that 7 years earlier, I could have played Gene Cousineau. I started therapy because I started getting lost, and the first question that I was asked was, wait a minute, where is the you in all of your story? And the pursuit of the you allowed me to expand. And the more you know about yourself, the more you know about all things. The more you know about all things, the richer your character becomes in every aspect of anybody's life. I will tell you what the comment, except for, oh my God, you are so incredibly beautifully complicated as Gene. I didn't know Gene was in you. And so it has given me a vista.
A vista, yeah. And by the way, you won an Emmy for your work on Barry, and well-deserved. The way you say in your book that the way you played Gene from one episode to another, different tones emerged. And you kind of touched on that earlier, but can you tell us how those different tones emerged?
Well, the first year, he was very funny, completely a total narcissist. Some warmth, you know, crept out like inadvertently. The second year, we read the scripts. I said to Bill Hader and Alec Berg, I have to meet with you. And I said, look, I don't in any way want to overstep my bounds, but I don't recognize this guy. This guy is not the guy I created in the first year. I don't know what to do. They said, don't worry about it. We'll get you your jokes and we'll get it back, but we're not going to repeat ourselves. And so every year was different. Every year, you had no idea what to expect till the end. Never saw that coming.
No.
Holy mackerel. Yeah. And now the logical conclusion is in cell block 8, where I am located, I am holding the Spring Sing next year, Finian's Rainbow. I will produce it, direct it, and star in it as the leprechaun. And all of the other prisoners will play the other parts.
That's great. You've said that Barry made you a better actor. How?
Oh, because it pushed me. The writing is impeccable. If it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage. Mm-hmm. A writer is the beginning and the end of entertainment. Without the writer, you got nothing. And the writing, Bill Hader, Alec Berg, and the group of writers they put together, Liz Sarnoff.
Yes.
There are no words in English. Mm-hmm. There are no words.
Henry Winkler, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today. Congratulations on Being Henry, The Fonz, and Beyond. It's a beautifully written memoir. I'm looking forward to your future projects. Thank you so much, Henry.
You know what? Thank you for inviting me.
Henry Winkler is an Emmy Award-winning actor and the author of Being Henry, The Fonz, and Beyond. Find out more about Henry at wpr.org/beta.
It's about, you know, what these misplaced values, money, status, living in the right zip code, and what happens when you're stripped of all of that. And how you're shunned.
Coming up, actress Ileana Douglas joins us to look at Connecticut through the lens of its movies. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.